So the Gemara is telling us that the greatest among them, Hillel has 80 students, the greatest among them, Yonasan ben Uziel, and ultimately again, the Katan Shebahen, the youngest amongst them, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So this Katan Shebahen, we're going to have to discuss what exactly it means. Because look at the next line of the Gemara. Pam achas chala, v'nichnesu kulan levakra. One time the Gemara tells us that Hillel was ill and his students came in to visit him. Now remember again, this goes back to something we learned about last time. When the Rebbe is ill, who is by his bedside? The Talmidim. Why? Because remember again, when the Rebbe dies, so his Torah goes with him. When Torah Shebaal Peh was Baal Peh, the Talmidim had to make sure to be able to take advantage of any last morsels of Torah from the Rebbe. So the Gemara Yerushalmi tells us, Hillel is on his deathbed, and all the Talmidim come in. Now watch this. Amad lo Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai b'chatzer. So everybody's inside visiting Hillel. Who's outside? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Why is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai outside? Why? Because he was the Katan Shebahen. So remember again, the assumption over here is Hillel, the Rebbe, is ill. Everyone comes in to do Bikur Cholim. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is left outside in the courtyard. Why? Because he was the least important amongst the Talmidim. Because he was least important, he is left outside. Amar Lahen, listen to this. Hillel says to the Talmidim, Heichan hu akatan shebachem. This is amazing. So Hillel sees all the Talmidim who came to visit him. And the question he asks is, where is the katan? Where is either the youngest, the smallest, the least important, however we define katan, where is he? Why? Shu'av l'chachma va'av l'doros. So this is an incredibly profound, overwhelming, prophetic moment. Hillel tells his Talmidim, where is the Katan Shebachem? Where is the youngest? Where is the smallest? Where is the least important of the Talmidim? Why? Shu avla chachma v'avla doros. What does that mean? Avla chachma avla doros? Literally translated. Avla chachma? The father in wisdom, and avla doros. Father for generations. Now, we're going to see that statement is not immediately clear. What does that mean, Avla Chachma? Does that mean he's the wisest? Can it mean he's the wisest? No. Why? Because remember, again, he's the Katan Shebakulam. So obviously, Avla Chachma, Avla Doros means something different. Father for the generations, father in wisdom. Is Hillel prophetically telling his students, you know that guy that you left in the courtyard? That Yochanan ben Zakkai, who in the class rankings is the bottom of the class? Now, by the way, I just want to point out, to be the bottom of the class of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is exceptional. We're going to see this in just a moment, what it means to be on the bottom of that class, what it means to be the Katan Shebakulon. But Hillel already saw prophetically that this young man that everyone else thought was, again, the Katan Shebakulam. He was the least regarded of Hillel's Talmidim. Hillel sees prophetically that he is going to be the greatest. He is going to be the Avla Chachma. He is going to be the Avla Doros. What that means only becomes clear years later. Take a look at number 3. There's a similar Gemara in the Bavli. So the Bavli says, Tana Rabbanan, Shmonim Talmidim Hayu L'Hillel HaZaken. So if you notice again, first distinction between the Bavli and Yerushalmi is what? Right? Is it pairs or is it total number? Remember again, in the Yerushalmi, it's Shmonim Zug. It's 80 pairs. In the Bavli, it's Shmonim Talmidim Hayilah Hulazakim. Hillel has 80 students. Now again, remember, whenever you see the Gemara tell about a great person that he had 80 students, what does it usually mean? Hillel only had 80 students. Hillel the Godfather had 80 students. Right? What it usually means is primary Talmidim. Hillel certainly had many, many, many more students. But with every Rebbe, there is a close circle of Talmidim. So he had 80 Talmidim in his immediate circle. Shloshimeh, listen to this. Shloshimehen ru'uyin shetishra aleim shechina kimoshe Rabbeinu. 30 of them were fit for prophecy like Moshe. Ushloshimehen ru'uyim shetamu lahem chamo ki Yoshua benun. This is amazing. So 30 of them were fit for prophecy like Moshe. 30 of them, the sun could have stood still in the sky like Yoshua. Esrim Beinonim. And 20 were average. Now you understand, to be average in a class where 30 could have had Nevuah like Moshe Rabbeinu, where 30 could have had the sun stand still for them like Yehoshua ben Nun. So that's a pretty good average to be in. If there are 20 of them who are average, that's pretty good. Gadol Shebekulon, Yonasan ben Uziel. So again, the Bavli echoes the same idea as Yerushalmi. The greatest of Hillel's Talmidim was a man of Yonasan ben Uziel. Katan Shebekulam, and the least important, or the youngest, or the lowest standing of all of them, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So Gemara tells us an amazing. Now the Gemara begins to get into some of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's qualities, and now we're gonna go through this a little bit, because the truth is, this is going to give us a window into the greatness of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, because you know sometimes we learn about great people. And I always find it fascinating to try to understand what makes great people great. What are the qualities of greatness? So you should know, this is actually very important, because in these parshios of in Chumash Bereishis, so why does the Torah tell us the stories that it tells us? Everyone's, why does it tell us the stories? To learn from. So there are a couple of answers to that. The stories themselves often contain moral, ethical implications, but embedded in the stories themselves are incredible keys to understanding personal greatness. If you want to know how an Avraham becomes an Avraham, the Torah tells us his stories. How does a Sarah become a Sarah? The Torah tells us these stories. These stories are not happenstance. These stories themselves are the key to understanding how ordinary people become great. Let me spend a moment on this for just a second. You know, the Mefarshim pick up, Rabbeinu Bechaye, many Mefarshim ask, if you go back to Parshas Lech Lecha, what's missing from the beginning of the Abrahamic narrative? What's missing? Remember, we're introduced to Avram Avinu how? Shem says to Avram, go to your land. Good. What's missing? What's missing from the story? I'm sorry? An introduction. Right? Think about this for just a moment. Let's fast forward a little bit to Chumash Shmos. We're introduced to Moshe Rabbeinu how? Even before he's born. Vayikach ish mi beis Levi. Right? We're introduced to his parents. We hear about the home. We hear about Amram and Yocheved getting married or remarried. We hear about Yocheved's pregnancy. We hear about Moshe Rabbeinu's birth. We hear about Moshe Rabbeinu being put on the Nile. We hear about Moshe Rabbeinu being taken by Bas Parah. Moshe Rabbeinu and his episode with breaking up a fight between two Jews. Moshe Rabbeinu fleeing to Midian. Moshe Rabbeinu shepherding. Moshe Rabbeinu getting married. Moshe Rabbeinu living by Yisro. And then, only after all of that background information, do we finally come to what appears to be the actual important story, which is... The Sneh is the first time that Moshe speaks with God, or God speaks with Moshe, and that's where Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, by the way, you're the leader of the Jewish people. It's a statement, it's not really a question, right? You are the leader of the Jewish people. But you see how much time is spent giving us biographical background to the greatest Navi of Kal Yisrael. Why? Why is Torah giving us all of these stories? Why is it telling it to us? Because ultimately, again, these stories are necessary to understand the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. If you want to understand the greatness of Moshe, you have to understand the family he comes from. If you want to understand the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu, you have to understand Bas Parah. Why Bas Parah? Why is that a necessary story? Why? Because Bas Parah demonstrated an incredible selflessness. She demonstrated a selflessness. She saw a helpless little baby who was clearly a Jewish baby. And she went ahead and put herself out to save that baby. Where does Moshe Rabbeinu get his midah of selflessness? Where does he get it from? Was it from his mother? Yeah. No. Why? He wasn't raised by his mother. He wasn't. Now I'm sure in his genetic makeup, I'm sure in his spiritual DNA, he had the selflessness of Yocheved. But Yocheved was not the mother who raised him. Bitya Bas Paro was the mother who raised him. She was the mother who raised him. He was nursed by his mother. He was physically nourished by his mother. But Bepashtus, he wasn't raised by that mother. So the Torah gives us all of this information so that we can understand Moshe. You come to Avraham Avinu, and there's no background information on Avraham Avinu. Isn't that fascinating? We see a little bit of background information at the end of Parashas Noach. Torah tells us about his father, his genealogy. No background information. Do you know why not? Never wonder about this? Why is there no background information about Avraham Avinu? No one ever wondered about this? You must have wondered about this. All right, so what's the answer? So there's an incredible insight by the Sfas Emes. The Sfas Emes quotes the Zohar. And this is going to forever change your conception about Avraham Avinu and the Avos and the Imos in general. The Zohar quotes a statement that says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was calling out Lech Lecha. He was looking for someone who was willing to be his ambassador, God's ambassador to mankind. He was looking for someone, ultimately, again, who was going to bring the message of monotheism to the world. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu was calling out, Lech Lecha, Lech Lecha. Who is willing to go? It was a call out to humanity. Many people heard Lech Lecha. Many people heard the voice. Avraham Avinu was the only one who was actually willing to answer the call. And as such, says the Sfas Emes something amazing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't choose Avram. Avram chose HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The godless of Avraham Avinu is that he wasn't tapped for the job. He chose it. He chose it. And that's why, again, says the Sfas Emes, there is no background information to Avraham Avinu. There's no biography. There's no telling us about his story. There's no telling us about his mishpacha. There's no telling us about him. There are midrashim that speak about Avraham Avinu's youth. But again, remember, think about this. Contrast this with Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, we are told about his mishpacha from the beginning. We're told about his siblings. We're told about his parents. Like I said, mother's pregnancy, little babyhood. We're told about everything. Avram, nothing. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was chosen by God. Avraham chooses God. So therefore you begin to see in the stories of the Avos and Imos, that's why the Torah goes through so much detail with the Avos and Imos. Because these stories are necessary to show us how do ordinary people become great. Avraham Avinu was, you'll excuse me, a regular person until he decided to become something magnificent. He made the choice. This is in contradistinction to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was marked for greatness from the beginning of his life. Where do we already see midrashically that Moshe Rabbeinu was marked for greatness from the beginning of his life? Oh, the Pasuk says that his mother saw he was born, she saw that he was good. What does it mean? He slept through the night? He was a good baby? He slept through the night? He didn't wake up? So Rashi HaKadosh says that the entire home was filled with awe. What does that mean, the entire home was filled with awe? Moshe Rabbeinu was one of those special neshamas that was clearly marked for a magnificent, luminescent destiny from the beginning of life. Was that Avraham Avinu's? Was that Avraham Avinu? No. Avraham Avinu was an Obed Avodah Zarah. Right? Machlokes, Rambam, and the Ravid wasn't until the age of 3, wasn't until the age of 40. But Avraham Avinu makes a, as opposed to Moshe Rabbeinu, who was clearly marked from the beginning of his life for greatness, Avraham Avinu could have just then easily disappeared into the shadows of mundanity. He could have gone on and been an ordinary guy, I'm sure a very nice guy for the rest of his life. Avraham Avinu chooses something great. He chooses something magnificent. And this is important because when you go through the stories of Bereshis, what's our greatest problem when we come to Bereshis? Let's be honest. The greatest challenge when it comes to Bereshis, we don't really pay attention to the stories or the details of the story. Why not? Why not? For good reason. Why not? Because we've been learning them since the time we're 3 years old. Right, so we've been learning that. And you know what the problem is? The greatest challenge is, very often, we're still in our little Medrash Says mindset. We're still in our my first Parsha reader mindset. We're still in our Parsha Sheets mindset. We don't really mature in the story. So, but when you take a step back And imagine, learn these stories as if you're learning them for the first time. You begin to see dramatically amazing things. These stories are here to teach us about how ordinary people become great. I'll give you one other example. Then we're going to come back to this. Another example of how ordinary people become great. The whole episode with Avraham, Sarah, and Hagar. Right? Torah tells us Avraham and Sarah didn't have any children. What does Sarah tell her husband to do? What does Sarah tell her husband to do?
Marry Hagar.
Right? Marry Hagar. Now I want to show you something amazing. So first of all, what does that mean? What wife in her right mind tells her husband to take another wife? Even though, again, remember, polygamy is permitted on a biblical level. Is it a good idea? How do we know it's not a good idea? Right? Before that, how do we know it's not a good idea? Because there's not one polygamy story in Chumash that ends well. There's not one story that, and he had multiple wives and everyone lived happily ever after. It never happens. Every single story ends badly. That's why at a certain point in time, it just stops because we learn from our mistakes. Not mistakes, they weren't mistakes, Chas v'Shalom. But we learn, Yaakov Avinu has a life filled with marital discord. Why? Because why? Why is Yaakov Avinu's home filled with marital discord? It's very simple. Why? What does a wife want more than anything in this world? Her husband's attention. And she does not want to have to share it with anyone else. And that's not a woman being selfish. That's called a healthy marriage. A wife wants to know that she is the center of her husband's universe. That all he does is think about her. That's all the wife wants. I mean, not all the wife wants, but one of the things that a wife wants. And that's exceptionally important with building a proper marital fabric. And what happens? So you have four women vying for the attention of the same man. You've got Rachel, Leah, Bilhah, Zilpah, and one. It's a recipe for disaster. And that's why Chazal say that ultimately, I guess, Torah calls a second wife with Sarah. It's just not a good idea. It's just not going to happen. Yet Sarah Yiminu tells Hagar, tells Avram to take Hagar. By the way, not only does she tell Avram to take Hagar, but she asks him to what? To do what? To marry her. You see, Avram agreed to take Hagar as what we call a pilegesh. Right? We loosely translate in English as a concubine. Meaning, so it's a wife, but it doesn't have full wife status. Sarah says, no. If you're going to marry her, marry her. She should be a full-fledged wife, not a pilegesh. Why does Sarah do that? Why does Sarah do this? You ever wonder about this? Why? Why does she do it? Because she's so selflessly dedicated to the Abrahamic vision, to perpetuating a legacy for Avraham Avinu. And as much as she would have loved for that to come from her, if it can't come from her, she is so selflessly dedicated to an ideal that she's even willing to tell her husband to do something that is actively detrimental for her own standing. You see these stories of simple, ordinary people rising to greatness. And again, you could look at this, I'm just giving you a couple of examples, but it's the same common theme. The stories are not there to entertain you. The stories are not there because they're interesting. The stories are not there for biographical information. The stories of the Avos and the Maos are the stories that teach us how ordinary people become extraordinary. How ordinary, regular people become incredibly, overwhelmingly holy and fantastic. That's Bereishis. So now, whenever you see, jumping back over here, so whenever you see great people mentioned in the Gemara, mentioned in the Mishnah, the first question we always have to ask ourselves is, how did they become great? Because the truth is, with rare exception, leaving Moshe Rabbeinu is a unique personality. That's why, you know, when the Torah says, Lo kam b'Yisrael ki Moshe od, you know, I've often felt it's not just a statement about his prophecy. It's also a statement about his gestalt, about his essence, about who he was. To be born and clearly marked for greatness from the beginning, there's something unique about that. More often than not, great people are not born great. They have to make a conscious decision to leave the ordinary world and become something magnificently amazing. So, if we're learning about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, how did Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai become great. See, here the Gemara gives us a little bit of insight. So first of all, number one, we're going to come back to this Hillel thing for just a moment. But we've got 80 students, already pairs of students. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is the katan shebekulan. Yonasan ben Uziel is the top of the class. We're going to talk about Yonasan ben Uziel towards the end of the Gemara. So listen to this. I'm Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. I'm number three, third line in. They say about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Shelo himiach mikra mishnah talmud halachos ve'agados dikdukei Torah ve'dikdukei sofrim kalim ve'chamurim gizeros shavos Kufos, Gimatrios, Sichas Malachi Ashares, Sichas Shadim, Sichas Dekalim, Mashalos Kovsim, Mashalos Shualim, Davar Gadol, V'davar Katan. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made it his business to learn everything. Everything. And if you go through this list, remember, Mikras Chomish, Mishnas Mishnah, Talmud Gimara, Halachos, Jewish Law, Agados, which are the stories of Chazal, Dikdukei Torah, Dikdukei Sofrim, Kalim, Chamurim, all different kinds of things. And some of these things, we don't even understand what they mean. Sichas Malachi Asharis. Conversations of the Malachim, conversations of the Shadim, conversations of the palm trees, the parables of the launderers, the parables of the foxes. Again, we'll begin to see what some of these things mean as we begin to go through Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's life. But what is this? What kind of picture does this paint? What kind of person is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? Even before we get into his biography, what kind of person was he? A thirst for more. A thirst for more. We're going to see Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai has an unquenchable desire, an unquenchable thirst for growth. Torah was not enough. Mishnah was not enough. Gemara was not enough. Dikduki Sofrim not enough. More, 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 more. And this we're going to see becomes one of the dominant traits of great people. Very often what distinguishes between great people and ordinary people is that ordinary people come to a point where they say, okay, I'm good. Enough, right? We're in a good place now. We plateau. Great people have an insatiable desire for more. More, 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 more. Life is about perpetual growth for the great person. And that's what Chazal is trying to convey to us over here. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai wasn't just great because he had a photographic memory. He retained everything that he learned. I don't know if he had a photographic memory or didn't have a photographic memory. But remember, again, that's nothing that you do. That's something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you. The greatness of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was an insatiable desire, an unquenchable thirst for more and more Torah, for more and more growth, for more and more knowledge. So skip down a little bit. So the Gemara says, wow. So let me get this straight. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai has an insatiable desire for spiritual growth and spiritual knowledge. And yet what? How does the Gemara describe him? He is the what? The Katan Shebekulan. Wow. This is the lowest of the class, right? This is the bottom rung of Hillel's Talmidim. So the Gemara says, Gadol Shebekulon, Alachas Kama Vakama. So the Gemara says, by the way, who could even imagine the greatness of Yonasan ben Uziel? To which the Gemara says, you're right. Amru Alav Al Yonasan ben Uziel, they say about Yonasan ben Uziel, Beshah Sheyoshe Vaosik Betorah, Kol Of Sheporeach Alav Miyad Nisraf. Incredibly beautiful Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan ben Uziel, the intensity of his Torah was such that if he was learning and a bird would fly overhead, the bird would be incinerated by the Torah, by the R, by the fire, coming down from above or going up from him. Whether that is literal or metaphoric doesn't really make a difference. What it's saying is, at the end of the day, Yonasan ben Uziel, when he learned Torah, there was a fiery connection between him and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So first of all, it's amazing to think about this. So can you imagine what Hillel's Beis Medrash looked like? Can you imagine when he had his 80 Talmidim together, and you have a Yonasan ben Uziel on the top of the class, and the Katan Shebekulam is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? This is the Katan Shebekulam? This was the lowest of Talmidim, the youngest of Talmidim, the small, whatever it means. It's pretty hard to comprehend. So let's go on a little bit. Take a look at number four. So now, But we're trying to piece together the biographical snapshot of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So we don't know really anything about his childhood. Obviously, we know his father was Zakkai, excellent. Right? We know his father was Zakkai. We don't seem to know that much about his father. We know that, again, his Rebbe was Hillel. We know that he was considered to be as great as he was the Katan Shebekulon. He was either, like I said, the youngest, smallest, least great of all the Talmidim, however you want to define it. We know that his Rebbe saw within him dramatic, amazing, overwhelming potential. We know that his Rebbe already calls him the Avla Chachma, Avla Doros. Now again, what does that mean? Father of wisdom, father of generations? Hillel's description of the Katan Shebekulon will only become apparent later on in history. Where does Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai begin his career? Take a look at number 4. So Rabbi Lau, in his Perush on Pirkei Avos, he gives a little bit of historical background. He says, Tchilas Darko, Haisa Bi'ir Arif, Shebegalil Ha'elyon. So apparently, again, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's career begins in the Upper Galilee in Eretz Yisrael. Remember again, this was still when the Beis HaMikdash stood. The second Beis HaMikdash is standing. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai begins, he's a Rav. He has a community in the Upper Galilee, a city by the name of Arif. Kivar Sham Anu Motzim Osel Mishamish Kimora Hora L'Rabin. So again, that's where he begins his rabbinic career, in the Upper Galilee in Eretz Yisrael. B'tkufazu, in the second paragraph, number 4. B'tkufazu, Hayurov Toshvei HaGalil Amei Aratzos. So at this point in time, historically, the majority of the residents of the Upper Galilee were entirely ignorant. Listen to this. This is amazing. Ad kidei kach shebemeshach shmona esrei shanos yeshivas osham, to the point that even 18 years, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is a Rav in the Upper Galilee for 18 years. How many shilas did he get in 18 years? Lobao lefanav ella shte shailas. Can you imagine this? 2 shailas in the course of an 18-year rabbinate. Why does he only get 2 shailas in the course of 18 years? Why? So again, there are 2 possibilities. Either the people were exceptional tamidi chachamim and never needed to ask the rav a shaila, or, unfortunately, as was the case, they were so ignorant that they did not even know what to ask. Such pervasive and rampant ignorance in the Upper Galilee that over the course of 18 years of a Rabbanus, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai gets 2 shailas. Skip down to the next paragraph. La'achar mikan, over the Yerushalayim. So this is actually, I'll tell you another piece that to me is often very amazing, which is you see great people often only really achieve their levels of personal greatness when they're older, later on in life. It's something really fascinating. By the way, even a Moshe Rabbeinu, who ultimately again becomes the greatest Navi, really only embraces his destiny at how old? 80 years old. Right, remember again, Moshe Rabbeinu lives till 120, so he becomes, remember, he's leader of Klal Yisrael for 40 years, so 80, okay, maybe 79, 78, if you take into account the Makos, going back to Paran, Makos for a year, 78, 79, 80, isn't that incredible? Rabbi Akiva, how old when he finds HaKadosh Baruch Hu? 40 years old. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, now, we're going to see something very interesting. We'll see this later on about how exactly old Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was. But clearly, again, if he's a Rav for 18 years in the Galil, and only then, right, we'll see, comes to Yerushalayim, he's got to be at least 40, 45, 50 years old. So again, you see, it's really, I mean, Avraham Avinu, there's something, I'm trying to figure out what it is. It's almost as if, like, great people have to taste a little bit of failure before they become great. They have to taste like a little bit of just ordinary, ragil type of life before they rise. It's really, there's something amazing. Rarely Do you see a story? You know, it's different. Yitzchak Avinu is different because he's brought up in a home of Avram and Sarah. Yaakov is different because he's brought up in a home of Yisrael. So you see, the Shvatim are different. But if you look at these people who were the trailblazers, what's really amazing to see is they spend a lot of years struggling. They spend a lot of years like just doing stuff that doesn't get them anywhere. Almost it appears kind of spinning their wheels a little bit. Of course, though, it's never spinning their wheels because it turns out that at the end of the day, those years that seem to be so unproductive, in fact, were incredibly dramatic and contributed to their future growth. So what happens? Number four, third paragraph. Lachar mikan. So remember again, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, 18 years in the Galilee. Two shilas. Career-wise, very frustrating and unfulfilling. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai does not have kind words, nor does he have warm feelings to the people of the upper Galilee. In fact, again, he feels personally like a failure because at the end of the day, he spent 18 years, almost two decades. Does he have an impact on the upper Galilee? Does he have an impact?
No.
So remember, this is always a very, very interesting question to ask because it really comes down to the core question of how you define impact. If I were to ask you, was Avram Avinu successful throughout his lifetime, what would you say? So, it's hard to tell. Because remember, again, let's take a step back. The Pasuk tells the meaning of Lech Lecha. That's when Avram Avinu takes leave of Haran, he travels to Canaan. Who goes with him? Who goes with Avram? Sarai. Lot. And? Hanefesh Asher Asu B'Charan. So the Rambam, Medrash already quotes it, that who is Nefesh Asher Asu B'Charan? The thousands of people, they converted. What's the problem? Right? Where are they? So by the time we come to Canaan, it's just Avram, Sarai, and Lot. Where did everyone go? Where did everyone go? Home. They went home. I mean, we spoke about this a little bit before Shabbaton was over, right? They went home. The inspiration is done. Everybody went home. Can you imagine that, by the way? Those thousands of people, really, the Rambam says thousands of people, that was Avram and Sarah's life work. Life work. They put their lives into these people. And when it finally comes time to say, okay, we've trained for this, we've readied for this, we prepared ourselves, we're going. Where are we going? I don't know, but God's going to show us. But let's put our faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's going to shepherd us. And everyone says, great, fantastic, let's go. Can you imagine the scene? They start out throngs of people. And every single time they probably make a bathroom stop. What happens? What happens? A couple of more peel off, a couple of more peel off, until they get to Canaan, and it's now three people. Four people. Avram, Sarai, Lot, and I guess Eliezer. Right? Four. Thousands. How do you think Avram Avinu feels? Probably like a failure. I want to tell you something else. Famine comes. Vayirav Baris. Where does Avram Avinu come? Comes to Canaan. First thing is a Rav. Where does he go? Mitzrayim. You ever wonder, now again, did Avram Avinu do the right thing by going to Mitzrayim? It's Machlokes on the Farshim. Right? The Ramban feels Avram Avinu made a mistake. That's what he attributes the mistreatment of Sarah at the hands of Paro. Avram Avinu made a mistake. Avram Avinu should have stayed put. Kadosh Baruch Hu will take care of him or ask God what to do. If you go with the Ramban's approach, Avram Avinu made a mistake by going to Mitzrayim. You have to ask yourself a fundamental question, which is, why did he go? Why did he go? We see, it's interesting, right? If you're Avram Avinu and God's telling you to take this magnificent journey to this unknown place, you get there, destination is Canaan. First thing that happens is famine. You would have thought that Avram Avinu would have done what? Ask what to do. Your whole life, your whole destiny is in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ask what to do. Yet Avram Avinu doesn't. And the Ramban feels he made a mistake by doing that. But let me ask you, why do you think Avram Avinu? Why is the first thing run to Mitzrayim? Why? Two possible answers. Simple answer is Hishtatlos. Right? Avram Avinu was a man who already understood intuitively. You cannot just sit back and wait for God to do everything. You have to take action. You have to put in your Hishtatlos. But there's another approach. Rabbi Soloveitchik brings down another approach, which is quite amazing. Egypt, at this point in time, Avram Avinu's time, was the cradle of humanity. Remember, again, it was in Egypt that there were the greatest advances of mankind unfolding. Avram Avinu was only too excited to get to Mitzrayim. Why? Because what does he feel have the opportunity to do there? Kiruv. Kiruv. What better place than Mitzrayim? Let me go, preach the word of God, convert people, bring them into the fold of monotheism. It's exciting. It's an opportunity. I don't know if anyone understands. His goal is not to live in a bubble. His goal is not to live in a cocoon. He is supposed to be the Av Hamon Goyim. Let me go to Mitzrayim and influence them. Is he successful? No. Not only is he not successful, but remember, he's kicked out of Egypt. Paro says, get out. All right. Granted, he leaves wealthy. He's gotten a lot of stuff now, Baruch Hashem. But he is kicked out of Egypt. Paro doesn't even walk him to the border. He's kicked out. Get out. If you look at Avraham Avinu over Yishmael, Avraham Avinu's job is to change the world. And yet, amazing enough, what happens with Yishmael? What happens with Yishmael? He has to send them away. You know the tension between Avraham and Sarah about Yishmael? What's that tension? Can you imagine Avraham Avinu? I'm here to change the world. I'm here to influence everyone. And I can't save my own child. I can't save my own Yishmael. That's it. Avram does not want to kick him out of the house. Sarah says, you don't understand. Yishmael is not your future. Yitzchak is your future. And I can't raise a Yitzchak in a home with a Yishmael. And the Kaddish Baruch Hu intervened and says, Kol asher tamar lecha sar shema b'kola. So is Avram Avinu successful? So everything depends on how you define success. That from a Judaic perspective, success is never defined by immediate results. Success is always defined by long-term results. Was Avraham Avinu successful? 1,000%. Why? Because over 3,000 years later, we, his grandchildren, are sitting learning about him in a classroom in the diaspora in Baltimore, and we're thriving, and we're growing, and we're mevakshim. Of course he was successful. He was ridiculously successful. Avraham Avinu might have been the most successful human being to ever walk the face of the earth. The difference just was, the success did not actualize or really come together during his lifetime. Was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai successful in the Galil, in the upper Galil? I'm sure he was. There must have been someone he influenced. There must have been some little change that he made, but he just didn't get to see it during his lifetime. It just didn't materialize in a way that was objectively discernible. All right, we'll stop over here for today. We're going to Meretz Hashem pick up with the rest of Yochanan ben Zakkai's story and the rest of his biography of Meretz Hashem on Wednesday.